Linda Orai, and she is a PharmD and an MPH, and she teaches at Creighton University School of Pharmacy in Omaha, Nebraska. And she has been working with their immunization task force in Metro Omaha since 1994 on this initiative to implement a birth dose at hospitals statewide. So she's going to talk a little bit more about that. Please welcome Linda.
I have been working with the task force since 94. Luckily, we haven't been working quite that long on the Hep B, or we'd really be frustrated. We feel like we've made fairly good progress for the small organization we are. So what I am going to do today is talk a little bit from the perspective of a primarily voluntary immunization task force and some of the activities that we've done over the last years in this particular area. Just to give you a little background on the task force, it has been the primary coalition in the state of Nebraska on immunization issues. It was begun in 1991 by our Children's Hospital in Omaha, along with Douglas County Health Department, along with a number of other partners. And that task force first began, as some of you might remember, based on our data in 1989, all of our measles epidemics. We had a measles epidemic at Creighton University, and that was the first year I was at Creighton. And then the identification, we did a school-based study that the task force was a bit involved in, along with Douglas County in 91, that looked at our school records and saw that while we were a little better than the national averages, we had pretty low immunization rates too. So that was kind of the basis on which our task force started in 91, and then I became involved in it in about 94. During the early years of the task force, until about 2002, 2003, we started out with a half-time paid staff person from Douglas County and a lot of involvement from our Douglas County Health Department. As many task force or coalitions happen, I think a lot of the health department people were doing the yeoman's work of the task force. But then with cutbacks in funds from CDC and funds that just had to be diverted to vaccines because we weren't getting the increases in fundings that I think everybody is familiar with, in the early years of the 2000s, our health department people really backed off on involvement, and then in 2003, we lost any staff support for the task force. So since then, it's been really volunteers. There are about 28 organizations that are represented in the task force, about 70 people that are listed as members of the task force. I won't go into other activities, but we really are pretty proud of the fact that I think we've been a very active task force considering the level of volunteerism that it's based on. And in the notes section of this, I have provided some of that background, but I won't go into it here. So then just to give you some background about our Hepatitis B birth dose project, this kind of arose initially out of a study that was done. I was involved in it, and our pediatric infectious disease physician, who's the consultant, both of us are Creighton faculty, and we did a survey along with one of her medical residents that was done in late 2002. And that survey, as we went through data analysis and eventually got it published in 2004, was when it was published in our state pediatric journal, showed that only about 25% of our birthing hospitals had a policy to offer Hep B vaccine. Then that was kind of the basis for us establishing this as an initiative that our legislative advocacy committee wanted to become involved in. And we started then working with that, kind of started a little bit in 2004, but then mainly 2005 and 6 is when we did most of the work. And things don't go fast when you're working with volunteers. The information here I have on background from the National Immunization Survey that gave us further data about the status of Nebraska kids actually was not published until 2008. So we were well into this initiative before we got this data that showed indeed our kids in Nebraska were not getting birth doses, certainly not within the first 24 hours. We are a local metro area task force, so our initial activities were in the metro area, which certainly accounts for well over half of the births in the state, but in the state, geographically, is a fairly small portion of the state. The greater part of the state is very rural, has very small hospitals with relatively few births in a lot of them. So some of the kinds of activities that the task force did, working with our various partners on the task force and others, we did an initial grand rounds presentation at our children's hospital where most of the pediatricians do attend and some of the family practice folks. Tom Sorry from Wisconsin spoke to us at that particular grand rounds, and it was very well received. He also provided us some materials at that time that we later used in our initiative that were the standing orders that they were using at his facilities at the University of Wisconsin. We provided educational materials to our medical staff and to our birthing unit staff for our seven hospitals. We have seven hospitals that have birthing units in Omaha, and provided those materials to those staff. And then we had one of our pediatricians on our task force who was a real champion for this area and really was gung-ho. He arranged meetings with all of the staff and knew quite a few of the staff from these birthing units, and really felt that it was just going to be a matter of talking to them, explaining to them how important this was, and it was all going to change. Well, unfortunately, I think he found that it wasn't quite that easy. I really think he did a lot of the initial connecting to people, but he was pretty, I think he got rather disillusioned by it, and it was a source of frustration to him. He kind of backed off after his initial efforts. So then we followed that up with our pediatric infectious disease specialist, who's very well known and respected around town, who ended up meeting with, and she actually went to the nursing staff first for those birthing units and tried to get them enlisted with it. And then over the course of 2005 and into 2006, we felt like we finally were making some real inroads in there. But it really took us probably a good year and a half for that to happen. I'm very happy to say our pharmacy school has been real involved in this effort, in that one of our other task force members, who is a pharmacist who works with one of our local private hospitals and has a pharmacy resident, they did a study, a small study, just a chart review study to document this transition for this one birthing hospital where they practiced, but that there was one hospital of actually a two hospital system that had the same policies. So this pharmacy chart review showed that in November 2005, before Dr. Chatterjee had met with their staff, that they indeed had a very low rate, 22% out of 50 charts reviewed, where children received the hepatitis B birth dose, and only 4 of the 11 where they got it within 12 hours. So then in September of that next year, after we had done our effort, 100% of the 50 charts that they reviewed for that time period had received Hep B, and 49 out of the 50 had received it within 12 hours. So we had documentation, and we felt that this was fodder to use for our further advocacy evidence. Around this same time, we were contacted by our state immunization program folks who have had some continuing involvement with the task force, although less so in recent years, but they asked us for assistance. We had kept them informed a bit about what we were doing in Omaha, and they asked for assistance from us for the rest of the state as well. So at that point, then, we initiated this promotion and assessment project that would address the whole state. We received a mailing list for our birthing facilities that the state provided to us. We developed a promotional PowerPoint information that would provide educational information that could be presented by a champion within those hospitals to their nursing and medical staff. We developed resource materials, including we got permission from Dr. Sari to provide the standing order templates that they had used, so people would have an example of how they could set up a standing order. And we've always, with our projects, really tried to make part of it assessment. So just as part of the promotional packet that we sent out, we developed a small survey, just a postcard, to ask a couple questions that I'll identify here in a minute. So this promotion effort then, we initiated that in June of 2007. And we purposely decided that there are really a couple groups you really have to convince of this. We sent the material to the manager of the birthing unit. We had no mechanism to send it directly to physicians, but we really felt the manager of the birthing unit was who would know what was going on and was in the best position to be an advocate locally. But we also sent the packet to the hospital CEO. By this time, we had information. The Immunization Action Coalition, many of you probably know, have published reports from hepatitis B managers from around the country showing that indeed people do slip through the cracks, that babies are born with hepatitis B, and that the hospital CEO was the person who the medical legal risk was going to make a difference to, and they needed to be aware of these risks. So we put together this promotional handout. It had the PowerPoint handout, and then they could request a CD with the actual PowerPoint if they wanted it. We included Sari's report. He's published about preterm and low birth infants, because that was one of the reasons, particularly the pediatricians would say they didn't want to use it. Also had information from him about that there was really no evidence that you'd end up with kids staying longer in the hospital because they had fevers, that there was literature that had been published, and we included that article. We provided some resources for how they could set up those standing orders, and then we provided copies of those reports on the legal risks and cases. So that was what was in the packet. And then the survey questions we made very simple, just a postcard. All they had to do was slip it in the mail. It was an addressed postage paid postcard, and asked them, do they have a policy to administer the birth dose prior to discharge, and is it a part of your newborn standing orders? We then, subsequent to that, actually put into place a telephone follow-up, and I'll give you information about the combined information that we got, combining the information we got from the postcard survey and then with telephone follow-up. We actually did a telephone survey of those facilities that did not respond to the postcard survey, and those who indicated at the June survey that they did not have a policy. So when we followed up in November, we called both of those groups. And at that point, we simply called the hospital number, asked for a nursing staff member within the birthing unit, and that's who we spoke to. This project was actually done through an independent study project that one of my fourth-year pharmacy students did with me. A woman who had really good communication skills and just did a really excellent job of these telephone contacts with each of these hospitals. Had a standardized question set that we established and then offered to those staff problem-solving assistance if they needed, if they were expressing, because we were seeing people expressing, well, I want this, but I'm having trouble getting it done. So we offered that assistance, too. We asked that person about the reasons that they perceived why they didn't have a policy. We offered to provide them additional resource materials if they needed it. We did not ask for the actual policy or standing order, so we do not have that documentation that they did indeed have the policy in hand. So the results from this survey, we actually found out that 3 out of the 65 hospitals that we had in the state were not delivering anymore. In a rural state, we're seeing that. But we had 58 responses from the 62 hospitals that we identified were still birthing hospitals, so had a high response rate when we combined the mail and the follow-up telephone call. Of those 58 facilities then, we had 65% who did have a policy at this point to administer hepatitis B birth dose. So since the 2002 survey, if you remember, we had a 25% rate of hospitals that had a policy. So we had definitely were able to document here an increase in the number of facilities that had a policy in place. Obviously, as Deborah indicated, that doesn't always mean they're getting vaccinated. 18 or 29% of the facilities had no policy or standing order in place, and we had 4 of the facilities we never were able to get a response from. So based on this, in terms of newborn access, we didn't have a way to actually identify children. We are actually just getting our immunization registry going and getting birth records in there. We don't have some of the information available to us that Deborah mentioned. But what we did do in our rather sparsely populated state is looked at the hospitals, because we had these hospitals identified. And for the 4 hospitals that we didn't know about, based on records available on the internet, we were able to identify that that probably accounted for less than about 1% of the births in the state, and the 18 hospitals that didn't have a policy probably only accounted for about 8 to 9% of the annual Nebraska birth. So we felt like we probably do have a substantial increase in our children that are being born in hospitals that do have a policy in place at this point. We did not measure it the other way, to look at every hospital that said they had a policy, because all we were really doing is just looking at how many kids were born in these hospitals. As I had said, in the telephone survey of those initially non-responding hospitals or hospitals that had no policy, we also asked them about what are the reasons why they haven't, they believe that respondent from the birthing unit, why they believed that we did not have the policy in place. 5 respondents indicated that the reason they felt was economic, that the physicians did not want to go to routine use in the clinic or in the birthing unit because the parents couldn't afford it and they were getting it at the public health clinic or to 1 or 2 months of age. So that was essentially almost a third of the respondents that were not providing the policy used that as their reason, or gave that as their reason. 4 just simply considered it low risk or unnecessary. 3 had a concern over the loss of records. 3 only said physician preference. Two indicated that they were coming to the clinic, so they didn't think it was necessary in the hospital. Two indicated they didn't have many deliveries, so it really wasn't that necessary. A couple mentioned that they had better reimbursement for doing the vaccination in the clinic, and one person indicated that they didn't feel like it was necessary because they were using Pediarix at the time, and they didn't feel it was necessary to have that fourth dose. So that overall, probably an underlying theme here is over half, and almost all, if you count that first one, really basically didn't think it was necessary. That was the bottom line reason why they were not giving it. They felt that 1 or 2 months of age to get it at the public clinic was okay, or that they explicitly said they did not feel like it was necessary. So at this point, we've kind of documented that we believe we've gotten the substantial proportion of babies covered in the state by hospitals that at least have a policy in place. What we have been doing since then is we have actually an article that is pending publication in our state journal that describes the results of our survey, and indeed we'll actually have a map in it that identifies, it doesn't identify by name, but by dot on the map, it identifies nursing hospital facilities across the state that are either have a policy in place or don't. We're doing this now, immunization presentation. We also have plans to then do telehealth presentations out to the areas in the state where we have hospitals that we, and they really are pretty scattered across the state, actually. Probably one portion of our state more scattered across, and there are a couple areas in our state that don't have many hospitals where the hospitals have converted. But we'll kind of target those telehealth presentations. We've also been talking with our state health department, who have made a decision and are in the process then of integrating to have vaccine provided free to these hospitals. And we feel that that can remove one of the barriers that people indicated was a problem in getting the policy accepted within their facility. So it's our intention now over the next months of this year then to follow up this promotion with another packet sent out to these hospitals. We will again send it to the birthing unit folks and to the CEO, and we'll incorporate a survey within that project as well. And we will send our survey, we'll send our publication that shows the map, that shows these are the facilities around the state that are doing it, and if you are one of the facilities that are not doing it, recognize that you really are operating beyond what's the standard of practice within our state. So we hope that this is going to help to promote some of that final conversion and hopefully make better commitment amongst within the facilities that have a policy that they're actually following their policy. So that's basically a description. This really wasn't a project that was initiated as a research project. It was really a promotion initiative, but we've tried to include assurance assessment activities as part of those kinds of projects. And the little engine, I don't know how many of you read that story to your kids, but I think as a task force, we've just tried to be a small organization that keeps putting along and trying to make a change in immunization rates in our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. That was a very interesting project. I think we have plenty of time for questions, so if you want to step up to the mic, and if you have questions, I guess let me know which speaker you have a question for. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a question for Deborah Blog.
Okay.
I'm actually from New York City, and I'm part of the group that's working on these issues in the city. And it's interesting that we found the same thing. Our registry and vital records have much higher rates than the NIS data. And I'm curious, when you, on the graph that you had the red line across, did you restrict days after birth? Like, did you say 3 days, like just like less than 3 days, just like NIS
did? You mean
did?
In that particular slide?
Mm-hmm.
There were several bars. The first bar was 1 day, the second bar was 2 days, the third bar was 3 days. And then, yeah, we could probably get it up again. And then I think the third, the mind. And then the NIS was the red. So it was comparing what we found versus the NIS.
And okay, so, and along those lines, either way we looked at it, also, if you kind of extended it, because ACIP recommendation said before hospital discharge, mm-hmm. so a lot of hospitals are kind of fighting with us saying, oh, the mother may have had a C-section, so she's in the hospital for 5 days, so the immunization was given on the fourth day or the fifth day. So when you look at that data, it's more, it increases as well, and I'm curious if your opinion on that, looking at the fourth or fifth day, and how that goes into the NIS, maybe they're wrong and we're all great, you know?
I can just tell you from our perspective, we make it pretty clear that we expect the standard to be within 12 hours.
Okay, and so you guys push 12 hours.
That's what we push. Mm-hmm. That's what we said in our commissioner letter, that's what we say in our materials. It doesn't always get done within 12 hours. And I think some of the barriers that we saw, not having a non-patient specific standing order definitely affects the time in which it's given, because you have to wait for a medical provider to sign the order and then give it. But yeah, we're obviously not seeing it always within 12 hours, but that's the standard that we push.
And do you guys require documentation if the vaccine was not given? Like, do you require something in the chart for the doctor saying a reason why the vaccine was not given prior to discharge?
No, we don't.
Hello, my name is Mark Francisconi. I'm the vaccine manager with the Rhode Island Immunization Program. And my question with regards to the birth dose, because we also have a birth dose initiative in Rhode Island, with the recent announcements that Merck is having a long-term delay in production for their hepatitis B vaccine, and the recent announcements that GSK is having supply issues as well, mm-hmm. how do you see and are you preparing for the fact that we may be looking at a hepatitis B shortage shortly?
We haven't prepared for that yet. It's a nightmare. So I don't have any good answers. It's not all that different from the HIB shortage. It's just not good. If anything else.
And that is something that we, you know, has been being discussed back at CDC, and we are very concerned about the birth dose, and we do want to try to do everything we can to preserve it. So we are keeping that in mind and, you know, hoping that the supply that GSK has will hold for the routine Hep B doses.
Does the CDC see the Hep B shortage as a result of the requirements of penicillin being used for the Hep shortage because it increased the demand of the single antigen Hep B?
And the question was, do we think that the And it's not actually being termed a shortage right now for the Hep B. It's just been, some disruption in the supply. I don't think we are theorizing. I think that they're two separate issues, and I don't know if Dr. Murphy wants to say anything, but I'm not really sure how to answer that question, actually, but my understanding was that they were, since the Merck, the Merck issue is obviously a separate issue from the HIB issue. I mean, a separate the Hep B vaccine issue is separate. So I'm not really sure how to answer that question. Trudy, do you have anything to add? This is Dr. Trudy Murphy with the Division of Viral Hepatitis.
It's a little bit complicated, but I can't, because there is lots of pediatrics. You can't help but think that it's certainly making the problem, even if it's a distribution problem with hepatitis B vaccine, a little bit worse. But there's a lot of discussion going on. Vaccine has been released from the stockpile. At this point, we don't consider that there is a shortage of hepatitis B vaccine. And you can be assured that there is discussion about this daily, and updates from the manufacturers daily, and I think we're at least at this point cautiously optimistic that we're not going to have a hepatitis B shortage, and we're working on it.
Can you tell us how that's being distributed as it's released from the stockpile and across the country?
I can give you a little bit of information, but not a lot, and maybe not as many specifics as you'd like. The vaccine in the stockpile is released. It's a very interesting process, but the stockpile was purchased by CDC, and in releasing it, it's purchased back by GSK or by Merck, and will eventually be replaced by each of the manufacturers over time. So then when the manufacturer purchases the vaccine from the stockpile back, then it is sent out through their usual distribution process, which usually goes, a portion of it goes to the VSC program, and a portion of it goes through their private distribution warehouses. I actually have a question for Deborah. We heard a little bit, thank you, Linda, from the rural areas, but you mentioned there might be differences that you hypothesized with rural practices where the perception was that maybe the birth dose wasn't necessary, and other areas. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you found in looking at those areas?
Yeah, it's just as you say, the providers in rural areas feel like there is so much less of a risk of hepatitis in their communities. They feel like they know their patients, that this can't possibly be an issue with them. And we address this by showing that there's not a county in our state that doesn't have cases of hepatitis B in it, even the smallest and the most rural, and try to approach it from that perspective, that they really can't be sure what their patients are doing outside of their offices. And
I will just add in that that's certainly a theme amongst those rural hospitals that still haven't shifted. It was a theme amongst the city hospital too. We had the same thing being told to us, and I think there it was really kind of overwhelming them with evidence and pressing them about the risks. And then once we got a couple, then you could use that to get the next couple. And that's really what it took within our city to get the shift. So we're really hoping that kind of peer pressure is a factor that can move people forward.
Just thought of one more thing to add. I think the last hospitals that we struggled with to get onto our birth dose program, some of them were those rural counties, but really the toughest and the last few were wealthy suburban areas where they also felt like they knew their patients and that this couldn't possibly be happening in their communities.
Hi, I'm Mary Conan. I'm from Massachusetts, and thank you for the presentations. They were great. But I did want to add to something that Mark was bringing up about the risk that we are at right now with the potential hepatitis B shortage. In Massachusetts, we are in the process that we just mailed out our hospital survey, and we asked in the process of returning it that they return their policy and a copy of their standing orders, if in fact they had them, so that we could do an assessment. We're getting ready to kind of switch from being solely a Recombivax product in Massachusetts to allow for Engerix to come in. And one of our decisions was, and thanks to Bob Larson, our vaccine manager, was to keep the birth hospitals using Recombivax as long as possible, because historically, when we were faced with a similar mix of products, we had a number of medication errors in the birthing hospitals where they saw the 10 micrograms on the Engerix and they were actually having the doses. Therefore, the babies weren't getting the sufficient dose. So I just want to bring that up here in this setting, because one of the things in the process of reviewing our surveys is, yes, these people have great standing orders, and they've gone to such an extent with their standing orders that they're mentioning one particular product, meaning Recombivax, and the micrograms in that product. So from our perspective, we are thinking this is timely as far as to try to, we're going to have some kind of memo go out to these birthing hospitals when we're ready to transition to Enzurex, that we're back to a product that, while it's the same volume, the micrograms are 10 micrograms, and that is the dose for a newborn. So I just wanted to bring that up because, if you know, I think it was just timing that we were able to discover it, but it could very well, you know, lead for some errors in some of the other communities. Okay.
Well, and we've already demonstrated in the public sector that those errors happen with shifts back and forth between what vaccines are given, and I think that's something we really have to recognize, because these birthing unit people are not vaccine people, so we can pretty much guarantee those kind of errors are going to happen, and those are the kind of things that make them throw up their hands and say, we're not doing this anymore, too, if it becomes complex.
Shelly Carter. I work out at Offutt Air Force Base. I'm an immunization tech. This kind of question is geared towards you, Linda. We're having an issue. Obviously, you know Offutt. We don't do birthing there. We go downtown UNMC, Creighton.
Right.
I just had a baby 7 months ago. She got it in the hospital, but a lot of people are not getting it. Coming into Offutt, into our immunization clinic, after talking to the pediatrician and asking for this dose. You know, they can be ranged from, you know, I spent 24 hours and then I was home. You know, it could be from day one to day five, day six. What do I tell my providers, and what do I tell these people that come in? Because we're not giving it. Not necessarily a budget issue. We have it. We just, you know, the guidelines that I've been following out of the hospitals when they should be getting it. So we're declining these people. What should I be telling my pediatricians, my providers that are sending them to me?
So they're not getting it probably in our hospitals. They're supposed to have shifted to their policy, right?
You know, I had my baby at UNMC. Like I said, she got it. They offered it to me. I could have declined it. So I'm not sure if these patients are declining it or if they're not getting offered. You know, we go three different hospitals downtown to deliver at Offutt. And, you know, again, My provider, or my doctor that delivered my baby, was a military doctor. So she knows that we don't give it in our hospital. Mm-hmm. I think that's why she really pushed it. But sometimes they go downtown to providers that don't necessarily push it, not knowing that Offutt doesn't give it.
Right,
so,
and it's basically the same issue, is they're supposed to get it in the hospital before they go home.
Right.
It's not even supposed to be an issue whether it's given at
Offutt. Right.
What's the time frame of those kids in terms of birth?
You know, usually it's the two-day check after the hospital. So depending on how long they stay in the hospital, they come back into Offutt for a two-day wait check and make sure everything's going okay. So it can be, you know, like I said, I was only in there 24 hours. Mine would have been day three is when I would have come into my clinic and asked for it. So
what I'm more meaning is, are these kids that were born in 2008?
Yeah, yes, ma'am.
So it's really documenting that we need to be doing. We have, for instance, we really use our partners, and Creighton has been a great partner for us, and our pharmacy school, particularly, we've worked really hard at being a good partner within this coalition, and it sounds to me like we need some chart reviews in more than just one hospital in Omaha, and I think you do. You just have to keep, because you get stubborn docs who maybe don't, or you get people who refuse it too. It can happen in both of those ways, and I think we do need to document it, and I think what can you do at that point? All you can do is go forward and get them in to the public clinic to get it done.
So you are recommending that we give this birth dose even 5 and 6 days
Well,
out.
It's not a birth dose at that point.
Okay.
You know,
so we should just wait for the 2 month then.
Well, I
no,
think if
I would
you,
say send them to the public clinic as soon as possible.
It's not possible to give these babies that dose at that follow-up clinic. I mean, that's when it should be given, is as soon as possible.
Because you're not giving vaccines.
We don't, because Offutt, the military, the Air Force does not offer us the budget to. Now, I write my budget, my own budget, every year. Next year when I write it, I can write this into my budget. But as of right now, this year, they won't get it. I don't have the supply for it. I don't have the budget for it. Next year, like I said, I can write it in. It's not an issue. But we don't have much guidance on what we're supposed to do. So,
Well, it sounds to me like the bottom line is it really would be good for you to have Hep B on hand, because indeed people will slip through the cracks, and we want to give it to them as soon as we can.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and you know, if you send them someplace else, is that many more people going to not get to the next place to get it? So,
and they won't get it anywhere else if they come to us, because we basically tell them it's not a, you know, you didn't get it in the hospital, you're just not going to get it. You have to wait for the 2 month is what our guidance have told us. So again, I was confused listening both to, you know, what am I supposed to do? And if I know I'm supposed to be giving it now, then I will attempt to give it and try and keep it within my budget. But
I guess our definition as advocates would be you can't do a birth dose once they've left the hospital. They're past birth. So it's not a birth dose anymore, but they should get that first dose as soon as possible because you don't want them slipping through that crack any longer than you can. And, you know, these are just system barriers that we all have to be strong advocates. And, you know, we can spend the whole rest of the day talking about universal access and all the rest of it.
And actually, we're past time. So could I ask the last two questioners to come to the front of to the table to ask your question?
Well, actually, this is not a question. It's something just to follow up on. What Mary said reminded me, and this is information for all of the grantees, is that with regards to hepatitis vaccines, and I'm not going to say shortage, supply situation that we have, one thing that was brought to our attention that we need to address, and other grantees might want to look into this as well, is that providers are purchasing multiple doses of the pediatric vaccine because it's less expensive than the adult and doubling up on it for their adults.
Yeah.
So we know that we have to go after those practices and have them pull back from doing that in order to increase and maintain our supply for the pediatric market.
And we're aware of that practice, and we are talking about, you know, what ways we can discourage that from happening because they're using our precious pediatric doses.